science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
So, yes, first we do have Dear Science, and Alan does have a mic on.
There we go.
There we go.
I can hear myself.
Okay. How are you, Alan?
I'm very well. How are you, Lillian?
Good. Good. Nice haircut, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
I guess the listeners looking can't sharp. See that. But
no, but Alan looks sharp in studio, as he does every week. Dogs. Dogs. This did confuse me, right? So we've got a study that's just been released.
Indeed.
That dogs can add years to your life, as in the human's life who looks after the dog.
Yep.
Now, I would have assumed that this was a given, personally. But tell us
yes.
more.
Okay, so these are folk in Sweden at the University of Uppsala. And Sweden appears to be sort of uniquely organised to carry out this sort of research because everyone has got their own ID number in Sweden, so they can keep tabs on them very easily. All dogs have got to be registered in Sweden, and all trips to the hospital have got to be registered as well. So you've got this nice database basically waiting to be mined. And so there were 3.4 million Swedes aged between 40 and 80, which they chose to start studying in the year 2001. Studied those for 12 years, so it's a pretty comprehensive study. And basically looking at, you know, whether you owned a dog, what type of dog you owned, how often you went to the hospital, when you died, blah-de-blah-de-blah, all that sort of stuff. So that went, obviously, 2001 and 12 years makes 2013, so it's taken them 4 years to, analyse all the data and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah, wow indeed. And they've finally gone and published it very recently this month. And basically the guts of it is, yeah, if you own a dog, then you live longer. Your chances of dying are decreased. If you own a purebred, your chances of dying are even more decreased. So if you just have a mutt, good, but having a purebred is better.
You could put that down to the fact that purebreds are expensive, though, and they've got more money for healthcare or things like that.
What did I say last week? Out of the mouths of babes. I mean, here we go again. It's just...
I'm sorry, Ellen. Absolutely... I can't help myself.
No, well, okay, well, let's
just
start.
But you're absolutely right, yeah. Okay.
Let's start with what exactly it is about dogs that make humans live longer.
Well, okay, well, obviously that's going to be in dispute because the authors are saying, well, obviously dogs need to be exercised, and so therefore, if you own a dog, you're going to get more exercise. That's the guts of it.
So is the study statistical, though, more so than a scientific study? Or have they gone into further detail than just the statistics that are shown?
Well, I think all sort of these sorts of studies are more statistical than scientific, if I'm going to be blunt. Yeah,
so they can just guess what the impacts of having a dog would have on health or things like that.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they've got the results. There's a correlation, but, you know, it's the causation that's going to be the important thing. Why does this come about? And you're absolutely right about the whole socioeconomic thing. You know, obviously, if you've got a purebred dog, then they are expensive and so therefore more likely to be owned by people in the higher socioeconomic bracket. And so therefore, they're going to be of better health anyway, you know, just by all measures. So
isn't that, I mean, there's a lot of room for debate there.
Oh, there is. I mean, the numbers are quite remarkable. So the risk of death in multi-person households is 11% lower, and from cardiovascular disease it's 15% lower if you've got a dog. And if you're a single dog owner, then you get a 33% reduction in the risk of death over single non-dog owners. You know, that's huge, absolutely massive. So you can't really argue with the numbers there. So now I guess, you know, as always, more work is necessary and they're going to have to come up with an explanation for this.
And so this is purely health related in terms of your physical health. Are there any kind of benefits in regards to your emotional or your mental stability, that sort of thing?
They were wondering about that. Again, you know, they were saying that, yes, it could have something to do with emotional ties, etc., to the dog and everything, and that makes you feel better and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So very possibly, you know, that could well contribute. But at the moment, they've just got the numbers to play with.
I saw a meme this morning, actually, and it was funny that I saw it this morning because now we're talking about dogs. But it was like from the dog's point of view, and it was saying, as the dog, that humans are like these elves that live for hundreds and hundreds of years, right? Because they're they live way longer than than the dog's life.
Yeah.
And the dogs look up to the humans as these kind of immortal beings. What's what's that about?
That's kind of mind-blowing, though. Of course they do. They probably look at us as gods.
Well, that's, I mean, I wouldn't place myself so highly on that scale, but that's what I mean, right? You've got this completely different perspective.
Yeah.
Anyway,
No.
So I'm wondering if did their lives get any longer by hanging out with us? Or?
That's a really good question. Well, no, well, actually, funny you say that. There was something in the news this week about the dog in Colombia that got dumped at the airport. I don't know if you read that.
There was.
So obviously somebody jetted off somewhere and just left their dog at the airport, and the dog was just sort of sitting around, and it wouldn't eat and it wouldn't do anything, and you know, eventually it apparently literally died of a broken heart. I mean, it's
Ellen, I'm sorry.
You come into our studio and you say these horrible things.
I'm sorry, but it was in the news, so it must be real. But you know, but no, I'm sure. I mean, you.
Wow.
News.
I'm sure we're good for dogs, and dogs are good for us. So
okay.
Speaking as the owner of four cats and one lost one, so five. Oh, yes, I know, Walter.
Okay, we're on the lookout for Walter.
Yeah, we've been on the lookout for Walter for about a year and a half now.
Oh.
So okay. Anybody out there in Tauranga, you see a ginger moggy?
Come back, Walter.
Yes.
We need the more years on the life. Absolutely. I'm sure there's something about cats too. Surely.
Oh, I'd imagine, yeah.
I mean, there's no walking cats, but okay. Let's move on. The first ever head transplant.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about this.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really sure I should, but again, in the news. So this guy by the name of Sergio Canavero, he's an Italian surgeon, and he has claimed in a recent news conference to have carried out the first head transplant.
So you say you're not really sure you should talk about it because we're not sure if it's for real.
Well, okay, so that's his claim. So when you dig down a little bit, you find that it was actually on corpses. So he switched the heads or bodies, you know. Who's to say what's a head transplant and what's a body transplant, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing, really, isn't it?
I've been following this story for ages because it's been massive hype for the past even like 2 years that this guy's going to do it, and he's got the patient that he wants to do it on.
Yep.
So they're actually going to do it on a living person. But the fact that I've seen so many stories, oh, they've finally done the head transplant, but it's actually on a cadaver, a dead person. I mean, give me a dead body and a couple staples or something. I probably do it myself. I mean, how do you know it works?
No, exactly. Yeah. You know, so, yes.
All right, well,
so what?
Let's talk when you get a degree or some medical science. No, but he's right. You're right, right?
You're absolutely right.
How do you test if there is actually a successful transition or...
Yep.
What? Yeah, why were they transplanting it in the first place?
Because he obviously wants to be the first person to do this.
What would you need a head transplant for?
Well,
a whole new lease on life? I have no idea.
Yeah, well, I think the guy who's signed up to be the one who has the first head transplant has full paralysis. I think he's quadriplegic. So they're going to give him a great new body. I don't know.
That's the ultimate.
And is that a new
donation.
Is that a body or is it a what's
he's going to get like a donor body from someone who died of brain injury or something like that, so the body's still intact, but
right,
yeah,
so you have a live head going into a
you're looking at as I say, you know, it's the ultimate organ donation, really. It's your body minus your head. But so you say there's been sort of stories about this for a while, and you're absolutely right. So he's claimed the first head transplant on rats or on a rat, and what he actually did was to put another head on a rat that already had a head. How the hell that works?
So
I have
no idea. He gave one rat another head.
He did, yes, yes.
Okay.
So now you have a two-headed rat. I don't really know how that works.
Yeah.
And then he did a, what was it, a monkey. And so he did it on live monkeys, apparently, but the monkey didn't regain consciousness, and they kept it alive for 20 hours for quote-unquote ethical reasons. And yeah, it really does sound all very, very, very nasty. And funnily enough, he's doing this work in China because I think the ethical standards there are a little bit lower than, say, Italy or...
I'm sure one day this will be a possibility, but is it now? I feel like if we don't have the technology and if it's so... like absurd to be doing this now, then just leave it for a bit.
Well, I hate to say it, but you know what would happen if Christian Barnard took that attitude? You know, No.
I don't know.
Come on, quiz. Come on. Come
on. Well, that's...
The first heart transplant.
I was going to say this. I mean, yeah. I guess this is how science progresses and we have these new developments. Mm.
It is, but normally it progresses with a lot more sort of ethical control than maybe this is having. You know, so as I say, it was all done in China. It was an 18-hour operation. They basically severed the spinal cord, severed all of your blood vessels and everything, and then swapped the heads and, you know, put them all back on, basically. Yeah. So
I have to say, it's pretty incredible.
It is amazing.
Despite these sort of concerns around it, it's quite... That sounds like a pretty full-on surgery.
Well, there was a nice quote from a commentator. So if someone's making grand scientific claims but hasn't produced robust scientific evidence, yet they've done a TED Talk, alarm bell should be ringing.
So has
so TED Talk's the new standard. So
he's given a TED Talk on this apparently, so therefore it's all kosher, you know, as long as you're given the TED Talk. But, and again, this is one of those things where you announce your results to the media before you publish them in a peer-reviewed journal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that's really not the way to do things. And
so we shouldn't really be talking about it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
we're media, we're jumping on it.
But that's what makes the news, you know? It's stories like this that grab the public's imagination or horror or whatever, but, you know, call it clickbait, call it whatever. But sort of the run-of-the-mill sort of scientific advances that, you know, perhaps are more difficult to describe than this, you know, because everyone knows what a head transplant is. They don't perhaps get the media column centimetres that they should.
Our job is just to critique.
Critique, absolutely. I like that, yes.
We're letting the people know that maybe it's not true.
No, I like that, yes. Yep.
We've got a story on that later, don't we? About media.
Yeah, we do. Okay. Yeah, media responsibility. Not quite the same area, but you're right, media responsibility.
Okay.
Well, let's quickly talk about Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris and his wife, Gina O'Kelly. There's an Irish name. I've heard of Kelly, but never O'Kelly. That's about as Irish as you can get, that one, I'd say. And they are suing a bunch of pharmaceutical manufacturers and distributors, 11 in fact, and they're suing them for $10 million, which to me seems an awfully small amount, actually, in the grand scheme of sort of American things. But what they're suing for is gadolinium poisoning. And gadolinium is probably not something that many people have heard of. Chemical element on the periodic table, element number 64. And this is used in MRI scans as a contrast agent, just to make basically make the pictures clearer. And so gadolinium itself is toxic. If you just take gadolinium and, you know, drink a glass of it or whatever, dissolved in water, it wouldn't be great for you. But the stuff that they put into your body for the MRI scans is basically encapsulated in this other molecule and just sort of basically wraps all the way around all your gadolinium ions in there, and it stops them being toxic and it makes them easy to excrete out through the kidneys and stuff like that. So they're suing the manufacturers of this stuff, these gadolinium chelates as they call them, because she apparently is suffering debilitating health effects supposedly from MRI scans that she had sort of 5 years ago or something like that. So there has been some reports of people having people with basically kidney failure or something like that. They have problems with these contrast agents, but other than that, it seems to be, you know, a pretty safe procedure. So it'll be interesting to see how this one goes. But, you know, if anyone can, Chuck can, you know.
Well, you had to, yeah, right. We had to go there. No, but okay. So it must be that. Is it going to matter how long it's been? Is it taking that long for the things to break down? Or,
well, what they are saying is that they've got long-term sort of retention of gadolinium in the body, apparently. And according to all the best available medical evidence, that doesn't actually happen. It does get excreted very quickly. So
this will have to go into the courts, and there'll be quite a scientific argument around it, right?
Oh, yes, there will. I mean, you know, all of these drugs, they've got to go through FDA approval, and FDA approval takes years and freaking years, you know. So basically anything that gets through, with very rare exceptions, is pretty good. And every drug's got a side effect.
I mean, surely there's a way to test her blood or something to see if there's still residual in her blood?
Yes.
So they've done that, have they?
Good question. Don't know. don't know. But again, that'll all come out in the trial, I'm sure.
I feel like you say that in the grand scheme of things, $10 million isn't huge, for, especially for a health
thing.
But maybe what I'm thinking, don't quote me on this, but maybe he's just trying to make a point. I mean, he's probably a pretty wealthy man. Maybe he's not doing it specifically for the money, but for to actually raise awareness for it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, yeah. Maybe. Well, we could credit him with those motives. Yeah, possibly.
Who knows?
Indeed, he does.
He does, and hopefully we'll know soon enough. Well, thank you, Alan, for coming in today.
Pleasure, Lillian, as usual.
Always good to see you.
Cool. Okay. See you guys.
That was Dear Science.